105 Sport.
From Cambridge 105 Community Radio, bringing you our own take on some of the major sporting events around the globe. Welcome along. It's cycling this time around, and our preview of the 2014 Giro d'Italia, or Tour of Italy for the uninitiated, which starts on Friday the 9th of May in, yes, you guessed it, Belfast. OK, so it's the first of the year's three Grand Tours, with the Vuelta a España coming in late summer, and of course the Tour de France before that in July, one stage of which will be starting just a few hundred yards down the road here in the centre of Cambridge. But plenty more on the tour to come on Cambridge 105 over the next couple of months. For now, we're focusing on the Giro with me, Chris Stewarden, and your host, Rich Hughes.
Okay, so we've got the Giro d'Italia that actually starts in Belfast, Chris.
Yes, it's clever, isn't it?
You know, it seems quite a long way from Italy.
I was going to say it's not as far away as a couple of years ago when it started in Denmark, but maybe that's not true. I haven't done the math.
No, we need to get Google Maps out to have a look at that. It feels further away from Italy than Denmark. At least it's on the same continent,
You've got to allow for the kind of convex nature of the planet as well. It's more complicated than you might think.
Yes.
But obviously the Tour de France starts in Yorkshire as well, just to confuse everyone.
Yes. So obviously the Grand Départ has... For the Giro is taking in the sunny climes of Belfast, for it starts on Friday. And in fact, they're having to start it a day earlier because it's based in Ireland and they've got to factor in a day of flying everybody back to Italy.
Yeah, they normally have two rest days in a Grand Tour. There's going to be a third rest day to give them a chance to get across from Ireland after the first 3 days. So yeah, starts on Friday. And it's set to be a really exciting Giro. One of the things I love about cycling is there's so many kind of subplots, races within races, aren't there? It's not just about who wins overall. All the teams in the Tour are going to have different priorities and objectives. Some are going for overall victory, some for stage wins in the sprints or in the mountains. Other teams that have less big riders are just looking to get themselves in breakaways and give the sponsors' names some visibility on the telly. So, and we'll explain a bit more about that over the next half an hour or so anyway. Incidentally, there's only one Brit in this year's race, unless things change over the last couple of days before it starts. At the moment, there's only one in the lineup, and that's Sky's Ben Swift. But he is in really good form. Recently had a good stage win in the Tour of the Basque Country and third in Milan-San Remo. So we'll certainly be talking about him a little later. Most of the top Brits, Froome, Wiggins, Cavendish, who won five stages in the Giro last year, of course, are foregoing the Giro this year to focus on the Tour de France, what with it starting in the UK.
Yeah, which is quite interesting because I know that the plan last year was to use the Giro as a nice warm-up for the Tour, but obviously different plans and different approaches.
Yeah, what a lot of the sprinters tend to do is ride maybe the first half of the Giro and then drop out because the second half of the Giro is always just Alps, Dolomites, mountains, mountains, mountains. So they'll kind of go for early stage wins and then drop out to prepare for the Tour. And last year, Cavendish, I think, probably was initially planning to do that, but he did so well in the first half that he actually was in with a chance of winning the overall points jersey. And that kind of, given that he missed out on it by one point the previous year, that kind of pushed him to finish the Giro. And I do think he probably paid for it in the Tour a bit. Obviously, he won two stages of the Tour, but both of them, well, one of them there was a crash and the other one was a split in the peloton. So in the real full bunch sprints, in the Tour, he wasn't quite competing with Kittel and Greipel as he would have expected. And I think this year, with it being in the UK, he's really keen to make sure that he's fully fit and raring to go. So he'll be riding California this month instead.
And why wouldn't you go to California rather than Belfast? So the route for the Giro, you know, anything that jumps out at you in that?
We talked about Ireland, obviously 3 days in Ireland, and then they transfer to southeast Italy. And then they'll just kind of gradually work their way up the country the first half of the race, skirting the Apenninos, the big mountain range that goes kind of all the way down the middle of Italy, really. And then the last 10 days or so, as usual, be in the northern part of the country. So lots of climbing in the Alps, which in the northwest, and the Dolomites in the northeast. And so the seven stages that we would kind of call summit finishes, and that's where the main contenders will make the biggest impact. There's a couple of individual time trials as well, and the opening team time trial. But there's actually eight stages that look like potential sprint finishes, which is more than usual in a Grand Tour.
Yeah.
And that's attracted a lot of the big sprinters. There's a lot of young sprinters that we'll talk about shortly. And it's only really Cavendish and Greipel, off the top of my head, and Sagan, of course, that are not there. A lot of the other big guys are there. So there could be some chaotic finishes, especially in the first week when they're all going for that stage win, and in the narrow, windy roads of Ireland in wet weather, could be a bit of chaos in the first couple of days.
Yeah, so the stages, have they been stacked like they usually do this year? You know, you tend to finish with less sprint finishes and more mountain finishes. Is that the same again this year, or have they?
It is, yeah. It's the last week, well, the last eight stages, six of them are tough mountain stages, and there's only two flat stages. So there's more for the sprinters in the first 2 weeks than there usually would be. And last year, I think there are probably only four sprint finishes, really.
Yeah,
Cavendish won five stages, but one of them was, he did really well to get over the late climbers. Only four of them were kind of flat-out sprints.
Yeah, there was a certain, you know, sense that the Giro wasn't set up for anybody who couldn't push hard up the mountains.
There was last year, yeah.
So I'm actually quite looking forward to the team time trial that starts on Friday. It's starting at the Titanic Centre, and
that's right, yeah.
Zipping through Belfast. It's only just over 20Ks as well, so it should be over pretty quickly.
Yeah, it doesn't start till quite late in the afternoon because it's so short.
Yeah.
So I think it starts about 3 o'clock in the afternoon our time, and well, their time as well, obviously. But it's a funny one, because I know team time trials always really exciting, and it's a chance for a lesser known name to take the first Maglia Rosa, the first leader's pink jersey. And looking at it, the teams that always stand out for a team time trial, well, there's kind of a combination of two. There's the teams, there's the GC teams, the guys who have got a rider that's up for the overall classification, that are just trying to make sure they don't lose too much time early on. And then there's the actual teams that are specialist team time trial that are going for the stage win. And the GC teams, really, Movistar for Nairo Quintana, Katusha for Joaquin Rodriguez, and BMC for Cadel Evans, they should all be up there. But then there's the specialist team time trial teams. Orica Greenedge are the first name that you think of. They won the team time trial Tour de France last year. Only just missed out on the World Championships to Amiga Pharma Quickstep, who's the next team on the list. Sky very rarely finish outside the top four in a team time trial. And Garmin used to be the masters of the team time trial, have dipped a bit recently with some changes to the roster. But some of these names I'm mentioning, Amiga Pharma, Sky, they've not quite got their kind of regular team time trial teams at this race.
Yeah.
You know, Sky, no Wiggins, no Kirienka, etc. And Orica Greenedge, it's theirs to lose, really. Movistar are probably the only team, I think, that could push Orica in this, because Orica Greenedge really are going with a team of one sprinter in Michael Matthews and eight guys that are, you know, four of whom are really good time trialers.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it would be, looking beyond them would be not exactly foolish, but you wouldn't put much money on someone outside that, those three teams at least, from having a large impact on that first stage on Friday night.
Only other thing I was going to say is Movistar, every time there's a team time trial, they come top three, and then everyone says, oh, that's a real surprise result, they did so well. It's like, no, they always do that to just get used to it. And they've got a couple of really good time trialists in their lineup, in Mallory and Castroviejo, but they also have they do a lot more training on team time trialing than a lot of teams, and they will not want Quintana to lose time to his rivals like Cadel Evans, for example. So I expect Movistar to nail that time trial and probably be the only team that can compete with Orica Greenedge.
Okay, so that takes the kind of, you know, opening day fun and games out of the way, and then it gets down to more serious business, or at least relatively serious business, in a nice tour around the sights and sounds of
The Emerald Isle.
Of the Emerald Isle, yeah, including Giant's Causeway, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
Do they pass the Guinness Brewery at all? Do we know that?
Surely. Well, maybe that's where the third stage finishes in Dublin, so maybe.
It must be.
Just right on the doorstep.
They could actually bring in some cobbles, if I remember correctly. The street that leads to the Guinness factory is relatively cobbled. So maybe they're trying to, do something a little bit more racy with that.
Yeah, to mix it up a bit. I haven't double checked the details of the run into Dublin, but so stage two finishes in Belfast. Stage three finishes in Dublin. Then there's the rest day where they travel over to Italy, and before stage four finishes in Bari. All of those three stages are likely sprint finishes. They're all quite flat, and there's so many sprinters in the race that means there's going to be a lot of teams that won't want a breakaway to stay away and are going to be willing to chase a breakaway down. So I'd be surprised if any of those stages go to a breakaway. I think they'll all be sprints. And we've got quite a lot of sprinters in the race, as you know, Rich.
Yeah, I think the terrain doesn't really suit a breakaway either, does it? It'd be something you'd get the odd one perhaps, but with it being relatively flat.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the chance for someone to put distance and difficulty between them would be tough.
The hills in the first three stages are not near the end, so the sprinters won't have any trouble getting over them, and they'll bring it back. So I mean, take that opportunity to look at who the sprinters in the race are. There's a lot of good young sprinters. I've got a list here of six that are all 26 or under, age-wise, obviously. Marcel Kittel, obviously, won four stages of the Tour de France last year. It's his debut in the Giro.
Okay.
And Michael Matthews, who we mentioned before, Vorica Greenedge, he won two stages of the Vuelta a España last year. Kittel and Matthews are the young guys. They're the only two that have won stages in Grand Tours before. Matthews is a good tip to take the overall lead, because there are time bonuses on the line for the top three.
Right.
So the sprinter in the team that is likely to win the team time trial is quite likely to take the overall lead, as long as there's no crashes that he's involved in.
And is there any intermediate sprints on the stages?
There are. I don't think that there's time bonuses on them. I think that's solely points for
just
the jerseys.
Right.
They've cut down the time bonuses on the line as well. It was 20 seconds for the winner last year. It's only 10 seconds this year. So I think that someone like Matthews, who should be up there after the team time trial anyway, is going to be looking at trying to get the overall lead. Elia Viviani's looking in good form, kind of peaking at the right time. He won a couple of stages of the Tour of Turkey last week, beating Cavendish.
Yes.
Won three or four stages,
yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Viviani beat him a couple of times. And then Nasser Bouhanni, the French, I think he's the French champion. Oh, I think he was the French champion last year, not this year. He's never won a stage of a Grand Tour, but he's very highly rated, and he can get over the hills as well. If there's any later on in the race, any stages that are kind of a flat finish but with tricky terrain before that, he's capable of getting over those. And another rider you could say that about is Ben Swift of Sky, of course, who rode so well in the last kind of 6 weeks. Nizzolo of Trek is a good bet for a potential stage win. Sonny Colbrelli of Bardiani is another young guy who's been going really well this season. And then at the other end of the scale, you've got 40-year-old Alessandro Petacchi, who is Mark Cavendish's teammate at Omega Pharma, and he'll be the lead sprinter for Omega Pharma in the absence of Cavendish and Renshaw. He's won...
Yeah, you wouldn't bet against him sneaking one somewhere along the line.
I think he's won 22 stages of the Giro in his career. He's won 48 Grand Tour stages overall. And he will be... And he's another one. If Omega do a good team time trial, you never know. He might be even in with a chance of taking the Maglia Rosa at 40. I think, actually, Luca Paolini at about 38 took it last year as well. So, it's not all about the young guys.
Not with the... I guess the old guys will kind of go, it's a long haul. It's not all about, going for it straight off. The wise old head...
Yeah,
probably wins more often than not in cycling.
Well, it's
certainly experience.
It certainly helps. Yeah, but I think now, I think someone like if you've not got the team to support you, then the experience really comes in handy. And Pataki is an absolute expert at just ghosting in at the end, and you know, no one's noticed him at all, and then all of a sudden he's hitting the lead with 50 metres to go. But someone like Kittel, he's not quite so experienced. He's only 25, but he's so quick, and he's got such a good lead-out train. His team will just deliver him perfectly to where he wants to be with 400 metres to go, and then he'll hit the front. And if the team can get into that position, there's hardly anyone in the world that can catch him.
So beyond the flat track bullies, you know, the guts of the race are obviously the hills and the climbs and the mountains. As I could say, hills. We are in Cambridge, after all, so I guess we call it hills. You know, what other stages, you know, jump out at you that are worth, you know?
Okay, well, stages 5 and 6 are less predictable. They probably finish too steep for the sprinters, but not steep enough for a GC guy to make much of an impact. So anything could happen stage 5 or 6, really. Stage 7's likely to be another sprint. And then it's stages 8 and 9, so the second weekend of the race, where it's really going to kick off. So the Saturday and the Sunday, the 17th and 18th of May. Most listeners in Cambridge are going to be watching the football on the 18th of May, of course, in the playoff final. But the Saturday and the first real mountain stage is dedicated to Marco Pantani, Il Pirata, the pirate who died 10 years ago, and he's kind of got, there's a little bit of a stamp of his on the route for this year's race. The finishing climb of the Monte Coppiolo. And I apologise now for future pronunciations of the Italian climbs.
I'll leave those to you.
Yeah, but the finishing climb is a favourite training climb of his. Ramps up to about 13% gradient in the final kilometre, which finishes about 20 kilometres of climbing up to the finish. And stage 9 has a similarly long climb up to Sestola near Modena. So that should be an attacking stage as well, because it comes right before rest day on the Monday.
Sure. So those are the first, you know, decent climbs.
Yeah. Until then, we won't really have much of an idea of who's got the form and who's going to be the main competitors. But then by the end of Sunday, we'll have had two mountain stages, and we'll be able to see, after this list of maybe 20 decent climbers in the race, which of those 4 or 5 are the ones that are actually going to be competing for the overall.
So, after next weekend, we'll probably have a better idea of who the GC contenders are, or at least shaken some of the clingers on and pretenders.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I've got a list here, and there's 5 that I would be pretty confident are going to be up there. And then I've got another 10, and you're thinking probably 3 of those 10 are going to be hitting form, and the others, because you never really know. It might be that some of these guys aren't actually targeting the Giro. They're just either riding support for their team, or they're just
putting
miles in the legs for the Tour de France. And you look at someone, a couple of the French guys like Thibaut Pinot or Pierre Roland or Nico Roach, who's Irish, but he's based in France. And those three guys, you think maybe they're more likely to be focusing on the Tour this year and not expecting too much of them in the Giro, whereas someone like Michele Scarponi, he'll certainly be focused on the Giro, because it's the only chance he'll get of leading the team in a Grand Tour this year, because Nibali will be the leader for the Tour and probably the Vuelta. So,
and Nibali's not in the Giro this year as well.
Exactly, so. So Scarponi will be leading Astana this year. I personally don't expect too much from Scarponi. They've got a couple of young climbers in their team as well. But I think the main 5 that I referred to before, we've got Nairo Quintana, Movistar, I really like what Movistar have done with him. He came second in the Tour de France last year, and they have decided that he's not going to ride the Tour this year, or certainly if he does, he's not going to be the leader. That'll be Valverde. And he's going to focus on the Giro and then presumably the Vuelta later on in the year, and actually ride as a team leader for the first time, really, for
I think
a three-week race.
The surprising thing about Quintana is actually how young he is.
Yeah.
You just can't quite
Yeah, the odds on someone else winning the young rider's jersey in this race are massive.
Yeah,
he's the only under 25 guy that's going to be up there. The other two are more veterans, really, both over 30. Joaquin Rodriguez, who unbelievably has never won a Grand Tour,
and
he's come on the podium probably the last four Grand Tours he's raced, he's finished on the podium. Certainly the Tour last year, the Vuelta and the Giro the year before that. Is off the top of my head, but certainly at least the last three Grand Tours he's raced, he's come on the podium, but he's never won one.
He must be targeting this for something, at least. Especially with Nibali not racing as well.
I'm sure he is. And if you look at the Katusha team, they've got no sprinters. It's a team solely based on riding for Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Similarly, Movistar's team is focused on riding for Quintana and BMC's team for Cadel Evans.
Yes.
So those three, I think, are the three where the teams are going with the sole aim of winning the overall or getting podium in the overall. And the other two names I had that I'm sure will go well, barring injury or illness, are Rigoberto Urán, who will be leading the Omega Pharma Quickstep team, having moved over from Sky.
He
came third last year, I believe. And Domenico Pozzovivo from Ager des Arts, who came actually rode really well in the Liège-Bastogne-Liège and finished fifth, which I thought was probably a race that was kind of too long and too kind of choppy up and down for him. But he's very light, and there's a couple of really steep climbs later on in this race where he's going to be at a big advantage. So I think Pozzovivo could be one to watch. And then, like I say, there's a whole host of names after that.
Yeah, I think outside those, I wouldn't have gone much beyond those three that you picked between Rodriguez, Quintana and Evans. I think I'd like to see Dan Martin mix it. But that's purely on a.
Yeah, and again, he's another one. It's interesting. Again, he's Irish. The race starts in Ireland. Yep. That'll definitely be motivation for him. It's probably the first time where he's targeted the Giro and been targeting it as team leader.
Yeah,
he's obviously come on leaps and bounds the last 2 years, winning Liège-Bastogne-Liège last year, winning Catalunya last year, and his Tour de France stage win last year as well. He's looked good this year. But I think it's probably a good sign. He didn't really go out too much early in the season. He just started to show form in Flèche Wallonne and Liège.
Yeah, I think I'd like to see Dan Martin mix it up a little bit.
And these two stages we're talking about, they might be kind of suited to him. It's not a big climb. It's a big climb, but it's only one climb. It's not kind of three or four climbs through the whole day.
Yeah.
And the more punchy riders like Dan Martin, Rodriguez, might have a good chance on those. And also, if Dan Martin isn't seen as an overall contender,
he might
let him go.
And
that's what he did in Catalunya last year. Like Rigoberto Urán in the Giro last year, because he was a couple of minutes down on the overall, he made a break up the last climb and they let him go and then he managed to push on and win the stage by 30 seconds or so and that got him back in the race and he ended up finishing in the top three. So that takes us to the end of the second weekend. Then there's a couple of transitional stages before the next big stage, stage 12, which is the individual time trial. So this is Thursday, May 22nd, into Barolo, which is right on the edge of the Italian Alps, and it's kind of, the Alps will be looming, and they'll be thinking, oh, God, this is where the real business end is going to be. But it's actually a flattish time trial.
Okay.
And again, similar to what we were talking about, the team time trial, there'll be some specialists riding just for the stage win, and also the GC contenders. So there's two stories there. It's not just who's going to win the stage, but which of the GC contenders is going to lose time on their rivals or gain time on their rivals. Not really sure about the time trialling ability of Quintana. I think it's probably underrated. Joaquin Rodriguez, as we're working on his time trialling as well, and Evans, whose reputation of the three is probably of the best time trialler.
Yeah.
He hasn't figured quite as highly in time trials of the last year or so as you might expect. So it's a quite unpredictable one in terms of the overall contenders.
Yeah, I think I'm not sure whether Evans recovered from being completely smashed in the last two tours in the time trials.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Whether he's had some kind of mental block
with
that, I don't know. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of in that time trial, there's not actually that many specialists in the race this year. Andrew Dowsett won the time trial in the Giro last year, just beating Bradley Wiggins. He's not riding this year, but his teammate Adriano Malori will probably be favourite for that. And then Orica Greenedge, as we've discussed, have got lots of decent time trialers. We don't know which of them is going to be the one on form at the time, but yeah. Cam Mayer, Luke Durbridge, Michael Hepburn, the three Australians, and Sven Tuft from Canada as well. They're all guys that can ride a really good time trial. So it's a difficult one to call, but I think, like I say, the main story is going to be which of the GC contenders. If someone like Pozzovivo might lose a couple of minutes in this time trial, but although having said that, he rode a really good time trial in the Vuelta last year, so you just like, that was one of the most surprising results the whole last year, actually. Yeah. Pozzovivo not losing time,
and I guess
time
trial. Hitting that 12 halfway through, pretty much you get an idea, I guess you get an idea of how you're feeling, how everyone else is feeling, and that's the one where you might actually, you either, if you're not feeling very good, you're going to lose your time. However, if you're feeling spot on, you're probably going to, if not gain something, then not lose anything.
Exactly. And a time trial 2 weeks into a Grand Tour is a different story to a time trial in the second day of a 1 week tour. You know,
sure.
They'll have been through the mill already. They've had a couple of big mountain stages.
So there's one further time trial.
Yes.
In the back end. But between that, there's some serious legwork to be done.
There is, yeah. So stage 13 is a probable sprint, and then the six of the last eight stages are a big uphill. And we're talking big uphill.
I can see category one. Category
exactly.
One.
yeah, which is as big a category as it gets in the Giro. And stage 14, there's three big climbs. That's up to Oropa. And then stage 15... is up to a climb called the Monte Campione, which to me might be Mountain of Champions or something like that.
Bet.
And that's going to be similar, if you remember, the Mont Ventoux stage in the Tour de France, so a really long stage, but it's not up and down, it's just flat for 200 odd K and then a big long climb at the end. So that's the Monte Campione stage 15, and then there's a rest day. And then stage 16 is one of the ones I wanted to talk about. It's arguably the queen stage, arguably the kind of the banner stage of the whole Giro this year. They take on two iconic climbs, the Gavia and the Stelvio, before the finish at the summit at Val Martello. It was the Gavia where Andy Hampstead took the pink jersey in sub-zero snowy conditions in 1988. He's the only American to win the race. And then the Stelvio was the setting for one of the best rides of the last few years when, Thomas de Gendt, the Belgian, went on a long breakaway to win the stage up the Stelvio, which ultimately sealed him a top three finish after being way down on GC before that day. He is actually riding this year primarily as support for Rigoberto Urán,
okay,
because they're both now at Quickstep.
Yeah.
But De Gendt will be hoping he gets let off the leash at least once to go for a stage win, and I think with that stage featuring the Stelvio, that might be the one that he's got half an eye on. But that partly depends on how well Urán's going at the time, I guess.
Yes.
But that's going to be a great stage over the Gavia and the Stelvio before they finish up the Val Martello.
That's serious stuff.
I
can't say anything other than that.
You look at the picture, and the thing is, it's Alps. If it's snowing, which it sometimes is, there's horrible conditions last year, of course, in some of the mountain stages. It makes it really unpredictable as well, and who can handle those kind of conditions the best? We haven't really, thinking about it, seen Quintana ride too much in really cold conditions. So it's very much an unknown quantity there, although he did ride quite well in Catalonia last year in the rain. But it's difficult to predict if the weather really takes hold, but that's going to be an epic stage nonetheless. The day after that's a penultimate flat stage, and then it's 18, 19, 20. 18 is another really big mountain stage, 17-kilometre final climb. Stage 19, you referred to the other time trial. That's when that is, but it is a mountain time trial.
Yeah.
It's just straight up the Monte Grappa. And that's the mountain that was the scene of Nibali's breakthrough in 2010, where he broke away and rode the last 40K solo for victory. That was his first stage win in a Grand Tour, and then he went on to win his first Grand Tour, the Vuelta, later that year. So that's stage 19, the mountain time trial. penultimate stage, stage 20, goes over two big climbs before finishing at the summit of Monte Zoncola, which is the toughest climb of the race. It's only 10K, so it's not as long as some of the climbs. But get this, average gradient 11.9%, average gradient 11.9%. It goes up to 22% maximum.
Nice.
And there's one 4 kilometre section in the middle of this 10K climb where it doesn't drop below 15% at any point. And it's just absolutely brutal.
What you want when, you know, on the penultimate
exactly.
day.
It's just
after 3 weeks of, you know,
who knows what?
It's snow, rain.
It's so awful.
Guinness.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You've probably had enough by then.
And I think riders like kind of Cadel Evans, Basso, Heijerdahl, those kind of guys could really struggle because it's so steep for such a long time that, you know, the lighter that you are, the better in terms of your power to weight ratio. And Quintana, Pozzovivo, Rodriguez, if Evans somehow, and I don't expect him to do that well actually, but if Evans does ride really well and is leading come that stage, it still won't be all over. That yeah. You know, if you crack halfway up that climb, you can lose 2 minutes, and anyone like I say, Quintana, Rodriguez, Pozzovivo will be having an eye on that stage as a chance for a late surge.
Okay,
and then the last stage sprint finish in Trieste. And which is interesting again because it's not just about who the fastest sprinter is. Not all of the sprinters will still be in the race by then, of course.
Yes.
And it's the ones that are kind of fresher. So people like Ben Swift, who's a decent climber, he might be able to conserve a bit more energy in the mountains than one of the flat out sprinters like Kittel, who
yeah.
although Kittel I'm sure won't be there by then. Kittel's teammate Luka Mezgec might kind of take over the sprinting for Giant Shimano in the last couple of flat stages. Michael Matthews won the last stage of the Vuelta last year, which was a very punishing mountainous route through the race, and he managed to survive the mountains and win the last stage there. So again, he's another one, maybe even Sonny Colbrelli. But like I say, that's all 3 weeks away.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, we're predicting what's going to happen 3 weeks, where anything can happen before then.
It's making me feel, you know, weary just thinking about it, let alone having to do anything that involves actually cycling it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think if you take anything from this podcast, it's the fact that it's quite a punishing Giro this year.
It is certainly the second half of it.
Yeah, it is pretty intense. And whoever comes away wearing the rather fetching pink jersey will deserve it. I think that's the bottom line.
Absolutely. And the Giro is an excellent race to watch. It's a lot of people's favourite Grand Tour. The fans just are absolutely crazy for it. They absolutely love it.
Stuff.
And it's, you know, like I say, it looks like, at first glance, it looks like a really good parkour. Lots of sprint stages and lots of really kind of iconic mountain stages as well. And actually, it's a really good lineup of riders. There's certainly more big names than there were at the Vuelta last year, for example, where certainly in the sprints there was hardly anyone
kind of featuring.
Yeah, there's
something peculiar about it. Felt a bit flat.
And a lot of them have, not every sense.
Sorry
but
for
yeah,
the pun.
But I think the Giro this year looks to be shaping up to be a really great race. It's just a shame there's no more Brits in it.
Yeah.
But, you know, when...
We're going to be spoilt
certainly have.
2 months or so.
Yeah.
And a half.
Well, I mean, you
6 weeks.
It's just ridiculous. When 10 years ago, when I was, 20 years ago, when I was watching cycling as a kid, it was rare for any Brits to be, you know, in finishing the top 100 of a Grand Tour, and they've won the Tour de France 2 years in a row.
Very much.
And Cavendish has won, God knows how many stages. So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, what are you thinking overall, Rich? Obviously, it's difficult to look past the three that we keep mentioning. But have you got any kind of wild cards or any off the wall guesses for who's gonna go well this year?
Not really. I think as I mentioned before, I think I quite fancy Dan Martin to have a good fist of it and to maybe upset some people. Probably not, you know, overall, but I think he might sneak a couple of wins maybe. And yeah, I think that's what I'd like to see. I think
it would
you know,
be great.
I think to look beyond Quintana and Rodriguez, I think you'd take some serious money, and the odds are stacked, you know, beyond those two. They get quite long quite quickly.
Yeah, they do.
So I think that they're not often wrong, and that this in this case, it is very hard to look beyond them. What about you, Chris? What have you got for your wild card? Who's your wild card?
Okay, well, my wild card. Okay, so well, first of all, I think you're right, Quintana Rodriguez. Dan Martin, I do think he'll ride a good tour. There's Niemiec of Lamprey and Rafa Majka from Saxo, from Tinkoff Saxo, we're supposed to call them now. They've changed the sponsors around. And my wild card is a Dutch rider called Wilco Kelderman, who is originally just known as a time trialer, and he's been really working on his climbing the last year or so. I've just got a feeling that, because we've not seen much of him this season, it's either because he's not in form at all, or it's because he's all legs
secretly
in one basket,
yeah.
focusing on the Giro. And I just suspect, looking at Belkin's team, they've not got any of the... Gesink has been ill, so he's out. Mollema's focusing on the Tour de France. So Kelderman is clearly their leader for this race. They haven't got any sprinters. I just have a feeling that Kelderman's been working on his climbing and is going to spring a few surprises. But that doesn't mean top three. That means, you know, a possible top six, outside chance of top six, when most people wouldn't be expecting him to be top 10. So, and I would say he'd be a good bet for the Young Riders jersey if it weren't for Quintana, obviously. Everyone's going to be going for second in that competition. But yeah, so Will, if you fancy a bet on an outsider to hit the top 10, then Wilco Kelderman would be my tip.
Okay. So I think that's it, Chris. I think we've covered pretty much everything. And as we said, I hope... You know, I hope that we've built it up enough to do it justice, and it actually does itself justice, because it does look like quite an exciting.
It really does, yeah, absolutely. And I think, like I say, the one thing I was going to mention with Team Sky, obviously the British team riding it, they'll be a bit under the radar this year. They've got no GC contenders. Richie Porte had his illnesses. He's now going to be focusing on helping Froome win the Tour. They would have even had Peter Kenyuk, the guy from the Isle of Man, but he just pulled out yesterday with illness. And Sky have had a lot of that kind of going around this year. It's strange. It's not really in keeping with their kind of marginal gains, keep everyone super fit all the time.
And I think that they might have been hit by the Tiemann Lock stuff as well.
Which still isn't resolved. Yeah.
I think it's just unsettled them.
Yeah.
And, you know, Brailsford's approach is so, you know, specific and focused that that's taken some of the shine off it. And maybe, you know, there's one of their other riders has been...
Well, it's the Sergio Henio stuff, obviously, with him. They're kind of getting suspicious readings, and they're suspecting that it might be just because he was brought up at altitude and something to do
they've
with
suspended
something to do
him
with
anyway,
that.
But
he's still not riding, and it's...
I don't think that helps.
Yeah. Well, actually, we talk about Sky riders with doping history. Michael Rogers has just been drafted into the Saxo team at the last minute. He's been serving a ban, but he was cleared of any wrongdoing very recently, and he's been drafted in the last minute. But anyway, we digress.
We should round up.
But certainly, like I say, it looks like being a really exciting tour, and I'm really looking forward to the Ireland stages, the team time trial on Friday afternoon, where we think Orica Green Edge are going to go well, and then the first two sprint stages in one into Belfast, one into Dublin. The crowds are going to be out.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's going to be chaos, mess, riders all over the road if it's raining. it could be hideous, but hopefully Ben Swift can negotiate them and maybe have a chance of a British stage win.
Fingers crossed. Thank you for listening to this podcast.
Yep, and you can listen to any of our 105 Sport podcasts. Just go to the website www.cambridge105.fm. Cricket, football, and more cycling throughout the rest of the year. Thanks for listening.
105 Sport.